Chapter 14, Milestones for Recovery. The number one question that I am most frequently asked is, how long did it take you to recover? My standard response, and I don't mean to be trite, is, recover what? If we define recovery as regaining access to old programs, then I am only partially recovered. I have been very fussy this time around about which emotional programs I am interested in retaining and which ones I have no interest in giving voice to again. Impatience, criticism, unkindness. What a wonderful gift this stroke has been in permitting me to pick and choose who and how I want to be in the world. Before the stroke, I believed I was the product of this brain and that I had minimal say about how I felt or what I thought. Since the hemorrhage, my eyes have been open to how much choice I actually have about what goes on between my ears. Physical recovery from the brain surgery was minimal when compared to the task of rebuilding my mind and recovering awareness of my body. Following surgery, Gigi kept my head wound clean and the 35 stitches healed beautifully. The greatest challenge I faced was a problem with the left temporal mandibular joint, TMJ, of my jaw due to surgery. But with the use of a healing system called the Feldenkrais technique, it mended quickly. The scar, however, was numb for 5 years, and I believe the 3 drill holes in my skull completely re-knitted by year 6. My mother was a very wise caregiver, and although she was protective, she did not stand in the way of progress. In the middle of February, 2 months after the stroke, I took my first solo adventure into the world. My verbal language was good enough to keep me out of trouble, we hoped, and I spent minimal time out and about alone. Gigi drove me to the airport and escorted me to my seat on the plane. A friend picked me up at the other end, so I didn't have to navigate life in the big world for very long by myself. I relished this first leap out of the nest as a huge step in my pursuit of independence. Based on this success, I was encouraged to take even bigger risks. At the 3-month mark, Gigi taught me how to drive again. Operating an enormous metal box on wheels at remarkably fast speeds with a bunch of other busy people doing the same thing while they eat, drink, smoke, and, oh yes, talk on their cell phones, reminded me that I was a fragile living being and life is a precious gift. My brain was still struggling with reading, and the hardest part of learning to drive a car again was to remember to look for written signs. Obviously, this was a problem. And even when I did see that sign, my comprehension was painfully slow. So, what's that big green sign up there saying, I just passed my exit. By mid-March, Gigi decided I was ready to try living on my own again. Although I was far from really being back in the game, she felt that, with the support of my friends, I was ready to try my wings. She reassured me that if I needed her, all I had to do was call, and she would be on the first flight out. A part of me was thrilled about my increased independence. A bigger part of me was terrified. Within a few weeks, the first major test of my readiness to resume my life was the gig in Fitchburg. That gave me something to concentrate on while I began fending for myself. My friend, Julie, drove me to the presentation, and it went so well that I was heady with success. Pun intended. Somehow I managed to not just survive, but to thrive again. I started spending time on brain bank responsibilities on the computer from my home. In the beginning, just a couple of hours every few days was all I could handle. Eventually, I started commuting back and forth to McLean Hospital, a day or two a week. In actual fact, the commuting was more difficult than the work. To complicate matters, following surgery, my doctors insisted that I take Dilantin as a prophylactic to prevent my brain from having seizures. I had never had a seizure, but prescribing medication is a common practice when the temporal region of the brain has been surgically violated. Like a typical patient, I hated my medication because it made me feel tired and lethargic. My biggest complaint, however, was that the medicine masked my ability to know what it felt like to be me anymore. I was already a stranger to myself because of the stroke, but mix in some medication and I was even more disoriented. Because of this experience, I find that I am much more sensitive to why some people would choose insanity over the side effects of their antipsychotic medications. I was fortunate that my doctors agreed that I could take my entire dose at night before I went to bed, so by morning, my mind felt much clearer. I took Dilantin for almost 2 full years following surgery. At the 6-month mark, I flew back home to Indiana to attend my 20th high school reunion. This was a perfect opportunity for me to open files about my past. Two of my best friends escorted me around, sharing stories about our time at Terre Haute, South Vigo. The timing for this reunion was ideal. My brain had healed enough to absorb new information as well as open old files. Attending the reunion helped me piece together memories of my youth. But again, in this situation, because I was a stroke survivor, it was critical that I not see myself as less than I had been before. Friends from my past were very kind to me, and I ended up having a great time retrieving memories. Shortly after the reunion in June, I attended the annual NAMI convention in July. It was the end of my 3-year term on the National Board of Directors, and I was officially stepping down. I had prepared a 5-minute speech to present to an audience of over 2,000 NAMI members. With guitar in hand, tears in my eyes, and gratitude in my heart, I thanked those wonderful people for giving me the courage to come back. I will always cherish that box of cards they sent me, cheering me on. I know I wouldn't be here today, in this condition, if it hadn't been for my NAMI family.